Hey guys, Colleen Wolf from NFL Network. And look, you may or may not know, I'm from Philly. I'm ride or die Philadelphia, but especially when it comes to sports. So you guys need to check out Mike Small on the Killing Me Smalls podcast. This guy crushes it, and I can't wait to hear what he has to say next.
You're killing me, Smalls!
And B stepping back and stroking two. Bogdanovich thinking about a three. There it is! Yes!
See it again. No double team help, and B takes it right to the rack.
What's going on, everybody? It's a Monday night, July 5th, on a long weekend, long holiday weekend. This is the Feed to Embiid. I am your host, Austin Krell, along with my guy, Jason Blevins, covers the Sixers for the Painted Lines, as well as 97.3 ESPN. He is indeed a double agent. And we have Mike Small of the Killing Me Smalls podcast and of the University of North Carolina. Gentlemen, how are we?
Well, I don't have a North Carolina degree. I did work there, but
I try to give you credit.
I will count it though. But I'm already missing Zumoff's voice from the opening.
There we go. I know. It's that took me by surprise. I was very shocked that came down the way it did.
What a legend! What a joy! And we got to get him on your podcast, Austin.
You know, it's funny is there actually was a never published episode with Mark Zumoff.
Oh, really? Why didn't you publish?
Because I think the timing of it was just like by the time it was ready to be edited, or by the time I had time to edit it, the game that we discussed was already passed. So it was sort of like,
rookie mistake.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you got to go evergreen with this stuff.
Yes.
I got one for you guys. 1987. I was his intern at Prism Sports.
Wow.
It was Mark Zumoff, Larry Rosen, and Ken Adelberger. And I used to run the teleprompter and log games and tell them when cool dunks happened and goals and touchdowns and whatever. It was pretty cool.
Well, in my experience, he was always a very kind soul. So he will be missed. He will be. He was a legend in the game. And I would say the next voice should not try to fill the shoes, but rather be their own authentic individual self, because you just can't be the next Mark Zumoff. There is no next. There's only one. You got to be yourself.
You hear that, Matt Murphy?
There we go. I wasn't directed at Matt Murphy, though. It was just in general. Although my suspicion would be that Murphy would go to radio and McGinnis would step up to the TV.
Yeah, I think
that would be a good choice.
Probably up to Tom.
Yeah. All right, gentlemen. So we have two things to discuss today. This is kind of a last second one that I threw in that I didn't inform you of prior to. But
I'm out.
Exactly.
This is some sort of you springing it on us. Gotcha interview. No.
Yes. So we have four free agents. We have Dwight Howard. We have Furkan Korkmaz. We have Danny Green. Mm-hmm. And who is the last one?
Is this a quiz? I didn't realize.
No, this is a question. Like I'm dead serious.
Danny Green, Dwight Howard,
Furkan,
and I don't remember. I just remember every time I see it on social media, I'm thinking I'm fine if they don't take any of them, but Danny Green. But
that's right. So what we're gonna do here? First, we're going to predict whether each guy comes back, really. So we'll start it off that way because I feel like that's a pretty pressing topic. And by the way, that free
agent, I'm looking it up. Yeah.
Yes.
Mike Scott.
Mike Scott. Yeah. Okay, Mike Scott.
We're already counting him gone. So
that's why it's already out
of our brains.
That's why I forgot, because it was Mike Scott. Those four. I guess we'll start off with Danny Green. because it feels like a pretty obvious one. They have the early bird rights on him. So I think there's a lot of reason from a financial standpoint to bring him back, even if maybe it's a little bit expensive. I think he was invaluable to the team, and I would certainly bring him back. And by all accounts, the tea leaves would say that I think it's probably maybe a favorable scenario, but apparently he's pulling a JJ Redick, as it was termed to me, where he's going for the big payday. So we'll see what the big payday looks like. Maybe it's Philly, maybe it's not. Jason, what do you think?
Well, that's interesting, right? So how did JJ Redick work out in New Orleans for the Pelicans? I'm not sure it really worked for them. It worked out great for him. Danny Green, I'm trying to think of a situation where a sign and trade as part of something else might make sense to a capped out team. I'm sure that exists. I just have to look. Maybe a New York Knicks, something like that, where I think the Knicks have plenty of space, but they can sign some free agents, spend their money, and then do some sort of sign and trade with a team for him. So there's scenarios. I think I saw this somewhere. He does not expect to be back. So
I think a lot of it's going to hinge on Ben Simmons. Yeah. You know, that's the elephant in the room. And if they have to trade four or five people to get Damian Lillard, they're going to need the body, and they'll definitely need to try to keep him. If not, you know, you got to wonder if a team like Oklahoma City, that is just tearing it all down and has a bunch of picks, says, you know what, we'll overpay this guy for 2 years, like a JJ Redick contract, like you brought up, to help create culture. And, you know, be a positive influence in the room and not expect too much. It makes a lot of sense for a team like that. I'm not sure if any of the teams that are on the cusp of winning a championship are going to spend $10, $12 million on him.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, I'd love to have him back at the right price. You're not going to overpay for him, even though he is a Tar Heel. You're not going to overpay for him, but, I think a lot of it hinges on the elephant in the room, and that's Simmons.
Yeah, I think – well, first, Jason, the article that you referenced was Keith Pompey's recent article, and I couldn't tell whether that was, like, sourced information or rather just a prediction on his part. I guess you could get the argument.
Keith doesn't do that. That's not Keith's game. Keith reports sourced information.
And
his source.
So that was someone telling him that he's not going to be back.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, Keith doesn't speculate. It's not his game. Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of people who speculate. There's a lot of people who make stuff up. There's the just reporting what they're hearing. People.
Yeah.
I fall more into the speculation category because I don't.
Oh, I know you do.
I'm just trying to look at it from the different angles and see what makes sense. And I don't spend a lot of time hunting for sources. Sometimes they come to me, but Keith doesn't do that.
Yeah, he's very well sourced.
He is. Even though people like to get on his back about what he says.
People were pissed at him about this process.
That was an article. I personally think that Danny will be back. I think it makes a lot of sense. And, you know, if he were to go anywhere other than Philly, I feel like there's like one pretty obvious place where he would fit in pretty well, which would be Dallas. Because, like, their wing defense wasn't great this year. Gives Luka a shooter that really can work the corners. They can run a lot of good actions for Luka to get downhill and then kick to Danny. So I think that's a good fit. I mean, he said on his podcast he wanted to go to obviously a great city. I think both LAs are more capped out. I don't know if the early bird.
Yeah, I'm looking now.
Yeah,
pretty capped out.
I don't think the Lakers want him back. I know that he didn't do so well in the playoffs. So I think the LA fans kind of turned on him.
Fair.
What about the Knicks? I mean, he's from Long Island. Again, a team on the brink of winning, or at least trying to build that culture. You know, definitely a Thibodeau kind of guy who can shoot. It's not a terrible fit.
Yeah, and the Knicks could just flat out sign him and overpay him. They have, like, no money on the books.
Exactly.
So they walk into next into this offseason with $49 million on the books.
Yeah.
And if they strike out on your top-tier free agents, which I don't even know what that class looks like.
It's not great.
They could easily overpay, multiple guys like Danny Green.
Yeah. There's my prediction right there. I think he ends up with the Knicks.
Yeah.
I have no sources.
Wow. Look at that.
Okay. How about that? Throwing it down.
So these are the top five free agents available this summer. It's Chris Paul, Kawhi, Mike Conley, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan. And then they have a pretty significant drop to, like, Otto Porter and, like, the rest. I don't know. I feel like the Sixers have the ability. The Knicks could sign him outright. But I also don't know. Maybe he thinks that situation isn't a winning situation. Like, that would be detrimental to him winning a title.
But it is, though. He's got the titles.
I know. But, I mean, you also
have to make money and make the playoffs.
Yeah, and that's fair. I have a suspicion that Joel liked playing with him. And if that's the case, I suspect he would be back.
I don't think he disliked it, but I'm trying to think through all of the times when Joel likes a guy, he will bring him up unprompted in interviews. And I'm trying to rack my brain for any time he brought up Danny Green.
Well, he brought Ben up in game 7 unprompted, so that was that gave me all I needed to know.
Well played.
We'll go to Furkan Korkmaz next. That will be the next guy. My guess would be no. My guess is that Furk gets an offer from your Charlotte Hornets, just for an example, and they give him like $8 to $10 million per year, 3 years. That would be my guess.
Wow, can you see Furk getting a $24 million 3-year deal? That's insane.
That would be.
He can slot right in the Cody Zeller slot.
Yeah.
There we go. Cody Zeller slot. That was something that someone from the Sixers said that they project his value could be. So I was taken aback by it. I was like, well, I hope for your sake you don't offer that money. but that's me. It sounds like you both are in agreement on that Furkan won't be back.
Yeah, watch him go to the Brooklyn Nets. There's my prediction.
He and TLC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems to be a graveyard for ex-Sixers who can shoot a little bit.
Well,
but
how's Brooklyn?
I don't think he makes
sense. Brooklyn is way at the apron. They couldn't.
Yeah.
They would have to do some gymnastics to make a contract like that work.
Yeah.
Would Burke sign a mid-level exception? I don't know.
But I think they're too close to the apron, actually. They're at $165 million.
Yeah.
Way over in the luxury.
Again, if Ben Simmons, Tyrese Maxey, and Matisse Thybulle and a bunch of picks go to Portland or Chicago or whatever, Furk's deal's not that bad. You sign him for 2 years, $20 million, I guess, depending on because there's not a lot out there. Which sounds terrible because I don't want him back, but
Furk.
It just so much hinges on what they're going to do with Simmons.
Yeah. My guess would be he's not back. That's just me, though. Mike Scott, I think we can come to a quick conclusion on this one.
By the way, low-key on Furk, don't count out a place like Cleveland where he's got some connections. Cleveland could be a place that wants to turn the corner and start winning. I don't know. No, but I don't know that they couldn't work something out with Cleveland to make for Cleveland to get out of that Kevin Love contract. I'd have to do the math to see if they could get
out. They like give Furkan a max deal and the sign trade him.
No, but you start talking about Danny Green and Furkan, and now you're up in those. Okay. You might be close to 18, 20 million, and then you add like something else, George Hill.
Yeah.
And it gets.
Are we really at that point in the NBA where if we have $20, $24 million to play with, we're looking at Danny Green and Furkan Korkmaz is the way to do it? Is there just not that much Cleveland, out there?
If you're Cleveland and you, you need to put some shooting around your two guards.
Yeah.
And Kevin Love wants out, and you want out from under that deal. He's got two more years left. It is declining, by the way. It's only $29 million the year after this coming year. So it's just that there's some connection. I've thought he might go to Cleveland for a few years now. So
interesting. I'm not aware of that connection. Are you allowed to?
No, I mean, Chad Osman, he's very close with Chetty, and Cleveland actually has a pretty good Turkish community, which Philadelphia doesn't.
Interesting.
Furkan's first couple of years.
Good geographical knowledge out of you.
Yeah, I talked to him. His family came over and lived with him the first couple of years, and they were miserable because they were just stuck in the house and didn't have a community around them. That was a really rough time in his life. That year that they, I think it's 3 years ago now, it was a rough time for him and his family. They went back to Turkey, but those are the kind of cultural things that you don't necessarily think about, but end up mattering to overall quality of life.
That's really interesting. Makes sense.
Yeah, it does. I could see this team in Sacramento, like throwing him a bag, and like, we need more shooting. Our defense already blows, so let's just really, really buy into it.
That's the definition of insanity for them.
Yeah, it would be. You're not wrong.
But what is the cap? Like they'd have to do an MLE for him.
I think it's like, I read somewhere, I think it's like 118 this year.
The cap is?
I think so. Let me take a look.
I guess the bigger question, and I know I keep saying this about Simmons, but in general, do you guys expect the trade season to be big?
The cap is 109.1 for 2021-22.
Okay, cool. Do you guys expect, Lillard, LaVine, all these rumored names to be on the go? Because there's a world where a lot of guys get traded, and there's a world where not many of them get traded. And if not many of them get traded, it's going to make it tougher for guys like Furkan to get the deal that they want. But if there's a lot of movement and, there's a lot of bodies flying around, then there needs to be bodies replaced and that sort of thing. So I'm curious what you guys think in terms of, do you think there will be as much activity as we seem to anticipate on the trade machine in the Twitter universe?
There's never as much activity as you think there's going to be.
Yeah.
Typically, I would say I think a lot of stuff's going to go down around draft time. I don't think the Sixers are going to make like that big blockbuster trade until around that time, just because they want to compile as many offers as they can. I also think Portland wants to do the same. I also don't think like Damian has really explicitly said like, "I get me out of here yet." But I also subscribe to the theory that I'm sure there are Sixers in his ear. Like, what's really cool is that Philly, if you think Portland loves you, Philly will love you. Love you, love you, love you. I think he has people trying to sell him on Philly, I'm sure.
See how good a recruiter Embiid is.
Well, it would help if his former teammate Seth Curry was not as introverted as he appears to be. So that's not exactly helpful, but we'll see. We'll see. But Dwight Howard, getting back to the question.
Well, let me just weigh in on the trade thing. I think it's going to be really active, because I think when you look at some of these teams that have really risen up in the last 2 years, you can write off some of them from the bubble, and then you see the Atlanta Hawks and the Knicks, especially those two rise up. And then you see the Charlotte Hornets finally starting to trend upward, maybe. Those teams that haven't turned that corner, the Chicago Bulls, the Sacramento Kings, that tier of teams that are either stagnated, starting to fall backwards, but watching other teams rise up, those GMs have a lot of pressure to make something happen. And you every day you spend with a young star that starts to get into their mid-20s, the pressure rises. You get diminishing returns on improvements. And there's a lot of science on this, like what age these guys tend to make their leaps. And once they get past that age, they tend to just have incremental improvements. So the GMs in those tier of teams are either going to be on their way out or under a lot of pressure. And those are the kind of teams that if I'm a Daryl Morey and I'm an experienced GM, I'm really spending a lot of time to understand their values, what they care about, what pressure they're under. So that's stuff that happens all year. You should know all of that stuff before you pick up the phone to talk about a trade. But I do think there's going to be a lot of pressure on that sort of teams that have exciting talent that hasn't translated into wins.
For sure. I agree with you. But I also don't – I just think it's like every summer, every offseason, like June, July, you start to really hear the rumors fly. And then it's like maybe one or two big trades.
People get cold feet. They do.
Yeah. So I just think it's – I could very well be wrong. I just think it's never as active as you think it is going to be. But that's just, I mean, I'm also only 25. Jason, you've been around for little less than two times as old as me. So I think you have more experience in this thing than I would. But that's just my two cents. Getting back to Dwight Howard.
The NBA is a much different game though than it was when we were younger. It's much more visible. It's much more star oriented in terms of, you know, the fan base and the trade machines and the interest in social media. And, you know, there was always, you know, the ups and downs with, you know, when Larry Bird and Magic were in, and then the, you know, the shoe era with the Air Jordans, et cetera, but it's different now. And there's, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of general managers that see what Phoenix did in a fairly short amount of time, and
Phoenix too,
see what Atlanta did in a short amount of time. And I think that puts a little bit more pressure on your, you know, your Charlotte Hornets, your Orlando Magic, your Sacramento Kings. And, you know, to just, you know, if you're Sacramento and you're just rolling with, you know, Marvin Bagley and De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield and expecting different results just because they're a year older, I think people are going to get impatient with that. So, yeah. I think it's fascinating, and I love this time of year as much as the games, quite frankly.
Yeah, I do as well.
Just for the sake of time, we do have about 37-ish minutes left here, so I do want to get to the topics as well. Dwight Howard, what's the verdict on Dwight Howard? I think if you trade Ben, you can bring Dwight back. Obviously, you don't trade Ben so that you can bring Dwight back. But I think like, you just have to minimize the amount of time that Dwight, Ben, and Thibault are on the court together. So if Ben's gone, you don't have to worry about that at all. I think Dwight was serviceable, even though everyone hates Dwight and everyone was like Dwight's this, Dwight's that. He was other than like having poor hands, which I mean it hurts, but I mean a lot of big guys have poor hands. I generally think he was okay, enough to bring. I also think like, Center is a position where once you get past the first unit center, you're not trying to find like, oh, who is this next ultra dynamic shot creating big man? Like, no, you need either a rim runner who can catch lobs at the rim, or you need a stretch five. So I feel like you can find specialists either way and have like a third center behind, you know, Joel if Dwight is having a tough stretch. But I think Dwight is a situational thing where like you see how it plays out, and maybe you bring him back if you decide to really buy into the ultra spacing type thing.
I'm going to feed our fan base, and I'm going to say that I agree with everything you said, and also I just do believe that Daryl Morey likes that to have – he talked about it at the trade deadline – optionality
for
the bigs, and I think he truly believes that as undersized as he may be, Paul Reed might be a guy that against certain matchups, certain nights – they can throw him out there for those backup minutes. And whether it's a Tony Bradley type or a
they can resign him by
Howard type, whether it's, you know, you get like a big guy that doesn't have to play every night and his minutes may fluctuate wildly based on matchup. But you have that defend in space third big, and you have basically your two different weapons that Doc Rivers can use per night instead of this very rigid rotation that they had at the end of the season where they really had no third option that Doc trusted.
Yeah.
One of the very few failings of Daryl Morey in his first year was not getting a stretch five. And I think it really, really hurt them at several points in the Atlanta series, especially. Dwight at this point is what he is, right? I mean, he's going to be excitable. He's going to be an agitator. He'll agitate his own fans with getting a ridiculous offensive foul when one of his teammates just made a three-pointer and it gets waved off. He'll pick up a technical foul at the least opportune time. But then there's times that he really is, you know, useful and beneficial and bring you energy. And I like what Jason said, because if Paul Reed can provide some of that stretch five ability, that would be great. Although I'd love to see them bring in somebody that can hit threes at the five position, which would solve a lot of problems.
Yep.
So if you're going to get him on a minimum contract, I'm totally fine with it.
Yep.
And I don't think anybody's going to give him more than that. So.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think he was nearly as like problematic as the numbers say he was. I mean, those numbers are all very much like they're good numbers, and I think admittedly even I use them, but like they're very much set numbers that you can disprove or like talk down if they don't support your argument.
Do me a favor, go find me the backup center where the team didn't crater and fall off a cliff when Joel Embiid walked off the floor. It's just there's something about
not many teams have Joel Embiid. So.
No, I'm saying legitimately his entire career.
I get
the team breathes a sigh of relief when he leaves the floor and they go on a run. And that is just as his backup, that is what you're gonna deal with.
Yep.
Instant confidence, instant swagger. Now they're gonna get they're gonna put it on you. And that's just the life of being Joel Embiid's backup.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so we're going to transition into our next topic of the show, and that's going to be summer homework for each of the Sixers. Jason, you did write an article for 97.3 ESPN on this very topic.
Yeah.
We can plug that article. I'll even post the link as I pull up the website right now. But how do you guys want to do this? Do you want to go down the line and do starters first, or do you want to like go bench first? Because I mean, those are typically the spots where you're going to see most of the significant improvement, I think, at this point.
I think we can start with Simmons, and I think everything's been said and written about what he needs to improve. So I don't know if you want to save some time and skip that, it's up to you, but. You know, maybe when you have an open dunk in a playoff game, you might want to take it. There's that. But it's your call.
Wise words. Wise words from a veteran.
Thank you.
With Ben, for me, it's not even about the jump shooting. I think I've abandoned that. I think he's just – Jason and I have gone back and forth about this. I believe he can shoot and is just afraid of doing it. Jason thinks he can't shoot. I wholeheartedly disagree. But that's just me.
All right. Well, spend spend 1 hour watching him shoot up close and watch the ball come out of his hand. And
yeah, I can't compete with that.
Well, can I be the King Solomon and split the baby in half and say that he can shoot? He just kind of sucks at it, but it's good enough that if he did it a lot, it would help the team.
Okay, that's a fair compromise. I think I can live with that.
Okay,
but
I think that's definitely wrong. I just say that he can't shoot.
Do you think he could be a 30% 3-point shooter from the corners? Just the corners.
No, I don't.
Do you think he could be a 35 to 40% shooter from the free throw line and in if he just took those shots? Not free throw shooting, but from that line, the nail.
If he switched hands, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I just don't think he's got the touch with his left hand at all.
I don't think he does either. No, I think he has the better touch with his right hand. For me, I think the jump shot thing is a lost cause. But I also don't think, like, I think you can rebuild you can restructure the team in some ways where you can mitigate the damage of him not being like a jump shooter in closing time. Like, if you go out and you get Kyle Lowry, I think that in and of itself solves a lot of the playoff problems. Not all of them, but a lot of the ones that hinder the Sixers in the Atlanta series. But I think with Ben, the touch around the rim is so bad. Like, if you're not going to shoot jumpers, fine. You need to be able to finish with either hand in a variety of different ways, under a variety of different angles, with guys in his face. That's what it is for me. And that's even if he comes back. I'm by no means convinced that he's coming back. I think he wants to be here. I do. But I think a lot of damage has been done. And I just don't think, like, it's for a guy that...
Why do you think he wants to be here?
I just have my suspicions. I think he wants to be here. I do. I think it's a kind of market where like in LA, he'd have TMZ around him all day long. He would never be able to go anywhere. I think he can sort of fade into, you know, the New Jersey hillsides, live his life in peace a little bit, and come play ball, you know, every other night.
Well, yeah, no, I disagree with that. I think TMZ will be in your face and they'll ask a gotcha question, but he's so good at giving the snarky response. That's all they want. And it'll be easy. They'll love it. He'll love it. He can give his little response and it goes away. It's none of this like grading, you know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I
think Howard coming back a week later with more venom.
Yeah, I think the media in LA would certainly be more favorable. But I think in LA, he has I think in a lot of ways, like out in public, I think he's pretty extroverted. In a sense, like I think he's more sociable than a guy like Joel is. But I do think Ben is the type where he likes to do his thing and not be bothered. I think in LA, he would have a hard time getting around anywhere because he always...
I'll give you another. Yeah,
see, I think if you send him to a small market...
It's Chicago. Chicago's the city. He gets everything he would get in Philadelphia, all the perks without the
Chicago, I think he'd let
grinding Chicago. Obsession. With the grinding obsession. They broadly love, I talk to people from Chicago and they still just love Derrick Rose, right? They just love him. And they vaguely know who Zach LaVine is and they like the highlights. They don't obsess like Philadelphia does. They're not going to be, he's going to get them to the playoffs and they'll love him. They'll love him. It's a great situation. I don't know about Portland. I just don't know.
I think he liked Portland. We're all like speaking in I know the guy less than Jason knows the guy, and I would guess by the fact that I've been on the beat for a year, I probably know him a little better than Mike knows him. But I don't think any of us really know him that well, and we're all speaking in we're projecting what we think he is as a guy. I mean, I think Chicago would be I think he'd like Chicago, but I also. I just think that he likes Philly. I think he does in some ways. I think he likes it enough where he's not requesting a trade despite all of the fair in a lot of ways, criticism that he's received.
I don't think he'll ever officially request a trade.
I don't think he has any leverage.
He is a clutch client, so he doesn't have to request it. They can just make a decision for him and do it or through him. But to get back to the point at hand, I've given up on him shooting the ball. All I ever wanted, and I said this actually at the beginning of the season, if he could be a 70% free throw shooter and that gave him the confidence to dunk the ball when he's within 2 feet of the basket and he played great defense, I would be fine. And it just regressed.
Was 35% good enough for you?
No.
Here's what I wrote in the article.
He said, "Embrace inefficiency." I'm reading it right here.
Yep. Go ahead. You can read it.
Ben Simmons. I can't read very well, but I'll try. I can write well. Can't read. Ben Simmons has finally admitted that his reticence to going to the free throw line is mental. This summer involved a lot of repetition and work to develop a muscle memory to a mechanic, left or right-handed. But mainly, he will have to be willing to go to the free throw line in front of 20,000 people and miss a free throw. His term. That's a good point. I think he has to be unafraid of missing free throws. That's a massive point. It's a good one. His determination.
Well, he should be used to it. So
yeah. He's definitely used to missing them. His determination to get to the line and put other teams in foul trouble remains a crucial to his transcendence to true championship level star. I agree with you. I think like, and that all comes back to like, I question his mental. I don't know if fortitude is the right word, but I think it implies something else. I would say his mental strength to like overcome the missing of one free throw.
It's
if he misses a free throw in the first quarter, does he now regress back to the entire playoff state where he was in, where he's just like, well, sorry fellas, I'm out for tonight. Like, you know, that's what you can't have happen. That's the true test, I think, here.
He had a breakdown. He had a legitimate breakdown in the playoffs. And, you know, and it got the best of him. Now, I've shared this with you guys offline, and I really believe this. He's gone through some major family issues this year. We don't have to get into that. Yeah. But between that, a very embarrassing breakup, TMZ style, as you mentioned, and some, again, you know, just it's been a really, really difficult year, and Lord knows what goes on between his ears. And it's not even fair for us to speculate. I feel terrible for the kid. I really do. But I just can't see a situation where you bring him back. And if he goes to not in LA, you know, not in New York, not a Boston, maybe not even a Chicago, but if he goes to a Minnesota or an Oklahoma or a Portland or whatever, and just gets it. I mean, it's not a fair thing to do to him in some ways, but if he could be the man, be that guy that scored. Well, if he could be that guy that scored 42 points on Rudy Gobert every night without anything looming over him to build it up again, I think that's his best shot, quite frankly.
I think we should relocate Philadelphia to Portland. Just pick up everything and move to Portland, all of us, and then
it's a beautiful city.
We'll call it a different market. Yeah. This is actually a good question before we move on to the next guy. I got a question for you guys. What would our situation look like right now if Fultz panned out to be who we expected him to be? This is a fascinating one. So if Fultz pans out, number one, you have your shot creator in the half court where you don't have the issues in the playoff series the way that you do. You also don't trade Jimmy Butler, so you probably still have Dario Saric and Robert Covington. So you have defensive depth on the wing. You have a very capable backup stretch four / small ball stretch five. It's really a whole sequence of events. You probably don't trade for Tobias Harris. So, I mean, you know, it's a whole chain reaction of the Fultz situation not panning out. And so I think those are all things that, unfortunately, this is where the team is because of it. But I think that's a whole domino effect that is sort of like a butterfly type thing where it changed. It had repercussions down the line, and it's like a parallel universe, if you will.
It just became a lot easier to construct a team architecture with him filling out that slot. You look at Phoenix and you say, why is Phoenix in the NBA finals? Because their architecture is like perfect.
Yeah.
There are three guys not only do they have three really good players, but they are all in extremely complementary positions. You have the point guard, you have your 7-1 center who's mobile, can catch lobs, and you have just an insane bucket at two guard with size. So those are the elements that championships are made from. Now, I don't think we all saw DeAndre Ayton taking this leap this year, but CP3 certainly brought it out in him, and that's what a point guard does.
Yeah.
So you put Fultz into that mix, and just the architecture of the team just becomes a lot more it makes a lot more sense. And then a J.J. Redick stays, and you surround those guys with those types of players, everything becomes easier.
Yeah. We could spend the next 5 hours going back and talking about the guys they should have drafted instead of Okafor, and what if Fultz panned out, and what if they chose Tatum instead of Fultz or didn't make that trade, and what if this, what we could go crazy doing that, which is, I guess, what Keith Pompey's article kind of did, if you think about it. But in any event, I think that the one thing that's bothered me more than anything is you look at all these guys that kind of grew up together, right? You know, Embiid and Simmons and would have been Fultz. Where was that veteran go-to leader on the court? I mean, if they had gotten Kyle Lowry earlier or somebody like that, imagine this, like what Chris Paul's doing for DeAndre Ayton. That's, you know, as long as we're talking hypotheticals, and you know, you traded for Jimmy Butler. What if you traded for a point guard where Simmons doesn't have to be the one relied on, and you had somebody who was a veteran leader that was able to call it out that everybody respected? That's the one that I look back on.
Yep. And at the time, I was not pro sign Kyle Lowry for $30 million for 4 years at age 31. I was not thinking that's what they should do. But to your point, in retrospect, it looks like it would have been exactly the right kind of move to advance the program.
Yep.
Well, I think the issue comes back to, like, the operating assumption was, like, in the case of Ben Simmons, progression theoretically should be linear. Whereas right now it's just like a rudderless ship.
Yeah. So we have this, or a vet coach. I just don't think a coach can do what a point guard can.
That's not the problem. Like, I don't know how many times
that I go over. Point guards are the most, they're the second most important position in sports. I would say NFL quarterback, one, point guard, two, goalie in hockey, number three. I don't even know what number four is, you know, in baseball. But
pitcher.
No, pitcher's, yeah, one.
Pitcher's not one. They only pitch every 5 days. Other podcasts.
Closer. Well, if you're a Phillies fan, it's closer.
You gotta be good to need a closer. But anyway. Yeah. So it's impossible to overstate how important a true point guard is. And Ben Simmons, it has 80% of the DNA of a true point guard. He just can't stress the defense in the ways that an elite point guard has to open everything.
And even Doc Rivers said it most of the year. He said he's not a point guard. He's a facilitator. And he said that a couple of times this year.
Oh, I can do everything. Okay.
Okay. So he's Sam Cassell without a shot. All right.
Doc did a very good job, I think, of trying to play the game of let's nurture Simmons, and I think it backfired on him when it mattered most, and that's why.
Yeah.
When it came down to it, you know, the answer was, is he a point guard? I don't know that answer. That.
You need to know who your point guard is.
Oh, that was a different question, but yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let's go over to Joel Embiid. He just comes off of an MVP level season. He lost it to a guy who won a participation trophy. Let's talk about Joel. Jason, you wrote face up game. And I think you make a good point. Like, the face up game is as good as it was this year, and I don't know the exact numbers, I would probably guess he was probably in the mid to the low to mid 50s in terms of making the twos, the pull up twos.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, so like I don't know how much better you're realistically going to get with that. I think for me, with Joel, it's understanding and learning how to land softly when you go up.
Like that's not going to happen. He's a giant. It's not going to happen. So here's what I saw this year that I didn't see previous years. I didn't see Dirk Nowitzki. I didn't see Patrick Ewing until this year. And if you, I know it's easy to say, well, there's no more upside there, but you know, if he turns into Dirk Nowitzki, as far as that face-up shooting game, there's a lot of upside left. There's still a ton of upside left. And he's never going to be an elite role man. He's never going to be.
Why not?
He's not going to be because he's not quick enough. He's not. His game is he's just not a pick and roll center. He's just not what he is at all. But if you watch Patrick Ewing or you watch Dirk Nowitzki and you put the two of those together, there's never been one of those. There really hasn't. And we were comparing him to Hakeem, but that would be on a completely different level.
Yeah.
And he doesn't need to retain his burst and speed to transition into that player. So that's a player that both of those guys were slow-footed with not a lot of hops. And yet they played a long time. They both played into their late 30s. The last few years weren't great, but I think this narrative that we only have a few years with Joel,
I think it's false.
May not be true because of this specific skill set that he's
developing. Yeah, I agree. Mike?
I agree with everything you said. I'm going to give you one that's going to surprise you possibly. When you look at his numbers, this is the difference between, I guess, watching the games and looking at his numbers. I think he can be a much better rebounder. Yeah. I think that, you know, there are times that he doesn't box out and he just, you know, he gets 12 rebounds just because he's 7 feet tall and he's huge.
Yeah.
I think he could be a better skilled rebounder, especially on the offensive glass. Mm-hmm. It seems like when the game's on the line and he really wants it, he's really good at it. And I'd like to see some more consistency and better technique around the rebounding. And, you know, I'm thinking about all the different things that he does. And quite frankly, Jason, you make some great points. Honestly, I just
don't start the ego too much. I need them to be at least a little bit.
Argue with me. I'm a Blevin stan, so as well as Krell. But I don't need him diving for loose balls in the backcourt in the middle of a game against Charlotte in November.
I agree.
You promoted me as a Carolina fan. Dean Smith had these guys diving on the ground and they would get points in the locker room. There was a big chart in the locker room where they would chart, you know, diving for loose ball, those sorts of things, hustle plays. I don't need Embiid to do that at this point. We know he hustles. We know he's good. I don't need him diving out of bounds. I don't need any of that. I need him to stay healthy and stay limber. And you know what? If you've got a 6'3" guy on the break, you don't have to slam it on him. Just make the basket and land, and don't land on your knee crazy like you did against Washington.
Now, yeah,
we've got to keep this guy okay.
Now, look, maybe just maybe sometimes there's going to be a Garrison Matthews in the way, and you know you'll come down hard in the knee. That happens, but I don't need the you're right. I don't need the diving in the half court. I don't need the awkward footwork as you try to get to the rim. Mm-hmm. I don't need like the unnecessary Euro steps. Those are all things that lead to knee degradation and joint on joint issues.
Yeah,
you just don't need that. And look at me being a doctor here.
You make a good point. And the other thing is, why haven't we heard about anything around his
trying surgery? Get some answers on that. I just
have because every big man has a slight tear in their meniscus. Whatever was going on with him, that wasn't it. And that was like a hockey injury where they gave us something that was factually accurate but misleading.
So you think that he had a meniscus, but it really wasn't much of anything.
I think he had something.
Yeah.
But the two times he got hurt, he fell on his ass, and it looked more like a back to me than anything like me.
Yeah.
And to me, it just screams hockey injury, where they don't tell you it's the shoulder because they know the other team's going to go after the shoulder.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go. Oh, last thing I'll play much about is like, I think the next progression that would really sort of separate him in the conversation, even though he basically like it was him and Jokic all season long, getting a positive assist turnover ratio or even a neutral assist turnover ratio, I think would be so, so big.
I agree, but that's why I think it's so important for that face-up game.
Yeah.
It's so important for him to be able to see when he's faced up on the wing, they can't double him with a surprise from multiple angles. He sees it coming, and he can quickly diagnose, and he did get better at diagnosing where to go with the ball once he sees it coming. When his back's to the basket, they have so many different attack angles for the doubles that it leads to guys sneaking under him and poking the ball out.
Yeah.
You know, one other thing about Simmons too, I think he'll be a lot better when he's playing with a better point guard. And I know that's a tough thing to say right now, but
you mean Embiid or Simmons?
If you think about where his problems were in the playoffs, it's because they gave him the ball at the top of the key and expected him to create over and over again. Where if you have a point guard who's not afraid to shoot, not afraid to get fouled, not afraid to penetrate, that could open things up. You're not as reliant on that, and you're not going to set him up for failure as often.
Well, his usage rate was just insane.
Yeah.
Because of how much he had to carry the team. And I think, you know, you don't have some of these fatigue factors when and fatigue is subtle in, like, you don't get positioned as low on the block because you didn't get down quite fast enough and you're tired, so that guy can sort of push you out another 3-4 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So now instead of getting deep position at 8 feet, you're at 12-15 feet. And that just becomes a much harder everything.
Yeah, I agree. Let's go over to Tobias Harris because we are running short on time. We'll get to the starters tonight. But Tobias Harris, I kind of think like just the ability to finish like strong at the rim is something that has plagued him at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think like he just does not have that natural vertical athleticism that he needs to get up above the likes of John Collins. There were so many plays in that Atlanta series where he went up thinking he was going to be able to dunk it, and then he was met at the top of the rim by John Collins. So, I mean, I don't know. At age 28, 29, I don't know that you're going to milk that much more vertical athleticism out of him. In fact, you might even be starting to see less and less than he did at maybe 26, 27. But I, there would be something else you could milk there. I would be fascinated to see that. That would be an area of focus for me.
Yeah, 3-point shooting. He averages one or two. He averaged like one or two a game in the playoffs. And he's really good at it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're right. He goes into that Simmons mode of like, you know, getting these bunnies and just completely missing them when you're 6'9" and you're up in the air. Throw it down or put it in. It just, I mean, look, I'm really good at Nerf basketball. It's like the same thing, right? But it's about the same height and whatever. But no, it just drives you crazy when he short arms those things. And you know, I love what Doc Rivers did with him this year in terms of getting him to make quicker decisions and go in a straight line, etc. And it worked. But man, just be more willing to set yourself up to taking those 3-point shots. I think it's going to open up everything else for you and the team.
Yeah. Jason?
I just think he needs to get in a stance a little bit more. And just, I think his, what he's got left is recognition on defense, being a little bit quicker in his decision making defensively, seeing what other people are doing. So I think he improved as a defender this year.
Yeah.
I think he's got a little more upside left there.
I agree with you.
Yeah. Let me ask you this. Do you think there's more to be milked out there with playmaking as a passer?
Only with certain partners. You know, he's.
I think there's a little bit better speed that he can do. Or he can read defenses if it's an obvious play. Like if he's driving to the rim out of from the right side and he sees a helper come over, instinctively making that read to the opposite corner for a shooter is something he can do better. But I don't think he's going to be whipping these no look passes to people. Like that's not going to happen. But I think
what's he missing to be your small ball five? Could he get good enough defensively to do that?
He doesn't have the height or the vertical athleticism that you'd need.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Let's go over to Seth Curry now. Seth, you know, he left a very positive taste in my mouth, so I don't that sounded really weird. Wow. He had a very good playoff run. I think the one thing, like, number one, I'm kind of curious as to what he looks like in a normal season where he's not fighting COVID and doesn't have the after effects of that affecting him for so long. But I don't know. I kind of feel like with Seth, he is what he is. And I feel like other than 3-point volume, really.
I mean, I think he gave you everything you could ask for from that trade. I mean, obviously, that's one of the great trades in Sixer history, if you look at it.
Yeah, it really was.
But, you know, the thing for me is I don't think Seth should have been your starting two. I think he should have been lightning off the bench. But I don't have an answer as to who should have been the starting two. But, you know, maybe as Maxey develops and, you know, I do love the idea of Thybulle starting at some point if Simmons isn't there. But I think that, you know, he did get hunted on defense, in the Atlanta series, and that did hurt. But as an offensive player, you know, I think he really was fantastic, especially in the playoffs. And he gave you everything you could possibly ask for. If he could get a little – he actually wasn't as bad on defense as I thought he would be, even though he did get hunted and get abused a little bit. And I think they could have schemed around that a little bit better. But I was pretty happy with him for a first year for sure, especially on that contract and what they gave up. I think it was a home run.
Yeah, they need to keep him, I think, going forward. I think like the turnover of if you trade Ben, if you then trade Dan, if you sign and trade Danny, if you trade Seth, like Embiid needs to have some sort of continuity and some sort of chemistry with his teammates. So you can't keep going year after year after year of just, oh, we're gonna try this guy now. Oh, that didn't work. No, we're gonna go over here and try that. No, like the guy needs to work with some pieces that he's familiar with that aren't Ben Simmons.
Yeah, but if you get the guy you want, you're going to have to give up a lot of pieces to do it, more than just Simmons, which is going to create that, unless you're going to do something like, you know, the trade that got turned down with Malcolm Brogdon or something for, God forbid, D'Angelo Russell or something like that.
People think D'Lo is like the great, that's the guy. Like I'm telling you, underrated.
Hate him.
He is a skilled guy. He actively is not a good player.
No, he's terrible. I don't want him.
Jason, your thoughts on Seth Curry?
I think you guys nailed it. Let's move on.
All right. Last starter for the day, Danny Green. Is there anything?
We already talked about Danny Green. There's no upside. He's 34, 35.
He makes a lot of corner threes.
There we go. Top of the arc, I would maybe go better at that. But Tyrese Maxey. Let's go over Tyrese Maxey real quickly.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Go ahead, Jay. You can go first on this one.
I think it's really important to figure out over the next 3 months, is Tyrese Maxey a point guard or not? And when I say that, I mean like a floor general, right? Is he a point guard? Not does he play the lead guard position, initiate offense, and put pressure on a defense? I just think it's super important for him to figure that out and run a team every day in the gym. At his age, every day he plays 5-on-5, he should be running the point position and knowing where his guys are going to be, how they flow into their spots, everything that Ben Simmons knows and has learned his entire life. Everything that you name your top 10 point, Mike Conley is the guy, right? Can he become Mike Conley? And if he can become Mike Conley, you now have a really, really interesting player. If he's not Ja Morant or Mike Conley, then I think the big thing I want from him is to take just consistently take that one extra dribble and get all the way to the rim, and not settle for the pull up 12 footer. Because I think teams, speaking about D'Angelo Russell, you know, the thing that keeps him from becoming an actual good player and makes him just an impressive player is that he will settle for that jump shot, that 12-foot pull-up in the worst possible times. And that's what other teams want you to do. So, you know, it's a huge offseason for him because
– Well, what's your confidence level that he can get there?
Point guards are point guards. They're made. They're born, right? And I don't think you start learning it at 19. I think you have to learn it at like 13. And he's a guy that has gotten. He's been a score first guy. So I don't have a huge confidence level in it. But he's still 19 or 20 years old. So, you know, just that would be my homework assignment for him. Every day you do nothing but see how many assists you can generate. That's it.
The Ben Simmons School of Basketball.
would you feel comfortable if the Sixers traded Simmons for Zach LaVine, starting Maxey at the point?
Yes.
Which is kind of how you have to start thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
I think you go like a 3-guard lineup.
I could be talked into that for sure.
Absolutely.
Because I feel like perimeter defense is very important, but it ultimately you can win a championship without having great perimeter defenders. You really need the defensive anchor to be your center. So, and you have a good defensive center. You need the shot creation out of your perimeter guys. And I think having like a 3-guard lineup of like Zach, Tyrese, and whomever else.
Curry, fine.
Just for the sake of conversation, Curry. You know, I think those are present a lot of dynamic things there. And then, you know, Tobias is a creeping into positive, but basically neutral kind of defender. Ben Joel is a very, very, very good defender, obviously. I think those are all things that work. For Tyrese, with me, I think the one thing is, like, he's not on the scouting report yet. Teams are going to see film of him in his rookie year. They're going to game plan for him. He's going to – once he's more in the rotation, there's going to be a scout on him. So the layups that were once basic or elementary or were, oh, these are things I prepared for, they're going to take it away. He's got to work on finishing on the off foot, wrong foot finishes, awkward angles, left hand off the high glass, right hand off the high glass, left side, all that different stuff. Like he's gonna have to figure out and sort of work on getting adjusted to different defensive looks that they give him. But I do think that there is value in a mid range pull up jumper if you can hit 52 to 56%.
It's can you be baited into it at the pleasure of the defense, or will you impart your will on the defense? I have actually no concern at all about his scoring upside. I think he could be a really dangerous scorer in the league at three levels. So it's just he's not the right size to be a guy that can only get his own bucket and win you a championship.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. Mike, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Real Mike Small. I do the Killing Me Smalls podcast. Got a great guest next week, Mike Lombardi, who is pretty well known around here, has had some very strong opinions on the Sixers as well as the Eagles, and really looking forward to having him on the pod next week. So Killing Me Smalls on the Painted Lines or on YouTube at Real Mike's, or I'm sorry, at Twitter at Real Mike Small.
Mike, and tell us about the charity.
Thank you for bringing that up. Actually, my daughter has a brain tumor and she's doing really, really well. And she has decided to devote her time and attention to those who are recently diagnosed with cancer of any kind. We've got a big opportunity on September 3rd. We're having a casino night. Please reach out to me if you'd like to go. It's $100 and includes chips, where there's going to be tons of prizes to bid for. But you'll be able to play all kinds of casino games, and it includes food, beer, wine. We'd love to have you there at the Spring Lake Manor. But if you'd like to donate, it's at @small_miracles on Venmo. And all the money, every single cent we make, goes into buying iPads and other things for newly diagnosed kids with cancer.
Very cool.
Thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah. Jason.
Do that. That story about me, just everybody, that's really important. Think about being a young kid, getting diagnosed, the just the shock, the fear, the loneliness, all of the things, simple little things that that charity can do, can really change people's lives for months, for years.
Yeah,
it's really important.
I'll second that. You can find me on Twitter at NBA Krell. I will always promote my Twitter. But on a much more serious note, none of this matters if we don't have health. So when Mike said small_miracles on Venmo, you can always, any spare change you got, and you know, it goes to a great cause. So we will wrap there, gentlemen. Appreciate you hopping on tonight. We'll be back. I don't even know when we'll be back, because there's not a lot going on in recent news. I guess if Ben gets traded, then next week we'll be on. But we'll see. Yeah, it's not going to happen, I don't think. But we'll see. As always, everybody, appreciate you tuning in. Have a good night.
Hey, it's Justin Grasso from Sports Illustrated. You're killing me, Smalls. Enjoy the podcast.